Episode number 40 of the Fight Night Picks podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head on over to their website, firstrow.ca, and use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, definitely the best mouthguard in the business. Head on over to their website, it's sisuguard.com, and use the promo code FNP10 for 10% off your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Friday, September 21st. We've got a really great special episode with two great guests, number two ranked UFC light heavyweight Volkan Oezdemir and journalist Michael Fiedel. So let's get into it. And welcome to episode number 40 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. I'm your host, Craig Allen. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at CraigAllenFNP. And like I said, this is a special episode. We're joined by number two ranked UFC light heavyweight Volkan Oezdemir. Last fought at UFC 220, title challenge against champion and pound for pound king Daniel Cormier. And of course, the fight didn't go his way, but Volkan and I are going to talk about his preparation for that fight. And in particular, his preparation for his fight coming up on October 27th against Anthony Smith at UFC Moncton. And as a bit of a reminder, you know, Volkan Oezdemir from Switzerland, fluent in French. So at the very start of the interview, I can't provide you subtitles on the audio podcast, but we spoke a little bit of French, but it's just at the very beginning of the interview, and I thought he might enjoy that, so it was a neat little thing to do. We're also joined by journalist Michael Fiedel from MMA Today News, as well as MMA Sucka, and Michael and I, we're going to break down Bellator 205, which is happening tonight, Friday, September 21st. You know, it's a really great card. Main events, AJ McKee and John Teixeira, or John Macapa. And so really looking forward to that one. We also talk about Bellator 206, UFC Sao Paulo, which is coming at you on Saturday, as well as some other, you know, interesting UFC and MMA related news. We're going to cover the Conor Khabib presser. Of course, we spoke yesterday just before the presser, but some of the things that we expected, some of the things we can expect from UFC 229 as well. I had Fernando Gonzalez on the show last week, and we spoke about his contract situation with ACB and where he's, you know, looking to branch out and possibly fight in the Golden Boy MMA promotion. So Michael and I, we were kind of in contact a bit with Robert Whitefort, who used to fight in the UFC, fighting now with ACB, and he's run into a bit of a snag with his contract with the promotion, so it was neat to talk to Michael about that, and we had a great conversation that I think you're really going to enjoy. So without further ado, let's get right into the conversation I had with Volkan Oezdemir. All right, so merci beaucoup pour me joindre ce soir, Volkan. Le savez-vous que comme presque la moitié de la ville de Moncton au Nouveau-Brunswick, il parle en français?
Oui, j'ai pu lire un tiers de la ville sur Internet parle français, la moitié c'est beaucoup, donc ça va être bien pour moi de combattre là-bas.
Oui, c'est une province bilingue, so it should be pretty good for you. As far as, you know, your rise in the UFC, what was 2017 like for you going on the run that you went on?
2017 was a magical moment for me because 2016 was slow. Was having trouble finding a fight, and 2016 I was supposed to fight in Titan FC, then the fight got canceled and I got the UFC call on 2 weeks notice, and then the fights just couldn't stop. I fought 2 months after that and 6 weeks after the next fight, and the fight after this one was for the belt, so it was a pretty big year for me.
So you had the chance to fight for the belt back in January. You fought Daniel Cormier at UFC 220. And obviously, the fight didn't go your way. But what did you learn from the title challenge?
I learned a lot. I learned a lot about before the fights, how to handle the situation, how the preparation has to go. I think it's I've matured a lot with a lot of stuff. And fighting the champ, I mean, he's a champ. Fighting the champs just gives you tons of experience. So it's definitely something that's going to serve me for my next fight.
In that fight, what did you do differently to prepare for Daniel Cormier than you normally do?
I actually just focus on everything I was doing already because, like we say, we don't change something that is winning. But then we have to always adapt to the new challenge, and Cormier's challenge was one of the biggest challenge was his wrestling. He has a huge wrestling credential, and so I was focusing a lot on my wrestling, and definitely a lot of different stuff, you know, like conditioning has to be on point, my striking always, all my weapons and my weakness, everything has to involve at the same time.
So you were shuffled out of a couple of different fights this past summer. You're supposed to take on Shogun Hua and Alex Gustafson. Now you're taking on Anthony Smith on October 27th from Moncton, New Brunswick. What's the game plan like for such an active guy, a guy that's been fighting so much with Anthony Smith?
The game plan won't change at all. Anthony Smith has been doing really great for his last fight, but now he's facing me, and this is going to be a different story.
So you're currently ranked second in the light heavyweight division with a win over Anthony Smith. What do you think's next for you?
Anthony Smith has a lot of hype behind him right now, so a lot of people talk about him, but for me, it's not even going to make a difference because I'm on spot number two, and I'm trying to reach, you know, for everything that is higher. Gustafsson is on top of me. Cormier is the champ, and John Jones is coming back, so there is definitely a lot of a potential matchup.
Exactly, and I mean, that brings me to my last question. News last night that John Jones is eligible to return to the Octagon anytime after October 28th. Do you agree with the decision to have him come back so soon? And if you get a win over Anthony Smith, do you think there's a possibility you could fight him?
Definitely. This is something that's going to happen in the future, sooner or later. So this is the fight that's going to happen. But then, you know, what about this decision? I'm not USADA, and I'm not nobody else to judge about this. I don't know about the Rideau sentence. You know, if you cheat and you do stuff like that, then you have to, you know, you deserve, if you judge properly, you deserve what the sentence you're going to get. But then he's, as you see, he's always a little bit shady. He has also some gray spot, and but now he's back, so it's good for him. You know, of course, he has to make money. He has so much money to make, and his career to continue evolving. So I'm happy for him, but now it's going to be, you know, time to walk straight.
Awesome, Volkan. Well, good luck with training camp and your preparations getting ready for Moncton. For the fans watching and listening at home, where can they find you online? And if you have any sponsors, let us know.
Yeah, you can find me definitely on Instagram under my name. Facebook also have a fan page, and Twitter, I'm too active on it, but I'm always having a great presence for all the important information. My team is helping me really, really well. I've also maybe... a small message, like Glenn Robinson, the owner of Black Zillion, just died yesterday. So he's somebody that helped me also doing the transition to America, make it a little bit smoother, giving me a place to stay and, you know, food to eat and a place to train also, and with a great team. And definitely, I just wanted to say a little thank you to him and for everything that he bring me in my life later on.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for joining me, Volkan, and good luck with the preparations for the fight.
Thank you so much.
Really like to thank Volkan Oezdemir for joining me, and at this time, I'd like to offer my condolences to the friends and family of Glenn Robinson. Of course, the Black Zillions founder passed away earlier on this week, and I know he had quite a large influence on not just Volkan Oezdemir, but the MMA community as a whole. So really a shame to hear of his passing. At this time, I'd like to introduce my next guest, Michael Fidel, member of MMA Today, as well as MMA Succa. And Michael and I had a great conversation about UFC Sao Paulo, Bellator 205, some of the different contract issues that are going on right now with different promotions and different fighters. And it was a really fun conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Michael. Thanks so much for coming on. Where can the fans find you before we get too far into this? Where can they find you online, and where can they find your work?
Absolutely. So I write for MMA Today and MMA Succa. They can find me on Twitter at Michael Fidel. And that's basically it in terms of where they can find me. Oh, I just started an Instagram page, Michael Fidel MMA.
So, awesome. Sounds good. You're joining all of us. I just joined Instagram not too long ago. It seems to be a lot of fun. It's kind of a pain to try and get my videos up on there, but it works out. It's not too bad.
Yeah. For me, the only hard part about Instagram is that the links that you include in a caption don't link to any content, so I have to constantly put in bio.
Link in bio, you're right. So this week we've got a lot of different MMA events happening. You've got Brave CF 16, you've got there's LFA 50, there's Bellator 205, there's UFC Sao Paulo. So I think what we'll do is we'll begin with Bellator 205. Now, you and I, we both talked to quite a few different fighters on this card. What's one of the fights that's kind of flying under the radar, quite low-key, that you're interested in?
Well, the fight that I would pick that's flying under the radar is Steve Mowry, Ben Moa. It's going to be Steve's promotional debut for Bellator MMA. I had the chance to talk with him back when he was in Titan FC, when he was still considered a prospect. I guess now graduating to Bellator, he's in the big leagues. Man, Steve's a great guy. He's super humble. He's fighting for all the right reasons. And he's got the skill set to match. He's training at Hard Knocks with Henry Hooft, Stefan Struve, Victor Pesta, all those guys down there, just honing his craft, getting better every day. And I can't wait to see what he does tomorrow.
It should be a good fight. I mean, both guys undefeated. It's one of those fights, like I kind of alluded to, the Bellator prelims tend to fly under the radar. And one of the fights that's on there as well, you've got Adam Boric, who's 7-0, taking on Jose Naldo Silva. And Silva, he was involved with World Series of Fighting and when it kind of transitioned into PFL. And then after that, he hasn't fought. He had two losses. Marlon Moraes was one of them. And he's kind of fallen off the map a little bit. Now, I see with the Bellator weigh-ins today, he elected to weigh in once, weighed in at 147.5, and didn't elect to weigh in a second time. So he forfeited 20% of his purse. That's one of those ones that I'm looking at as well.
Well, I know it's probably wrong to say this, but I do feel good for Adam Boric that he's going to be getting that extra bit of purse because, you know, he had the problem with the Gallagher fight and then his opponent fell through again and he was going to be fighting in his hometown of Budapest in Hungary. But that's also a teammate of Mowry's down at Hard Knocks. Hard Knocks taking over Bellator.
Hard Knocks is doing a really good job taking over Bellator. And one of the other teams that's really doing a good job is actually Team Body Shop. I mean, I spoke with AJ McKee earlier on in the week. He said they've got Baby Slice, they've got Aaron Pico, they've got a lot of different fighters, different, you know, looks, and especially in those lower weight classes between probably lightweight and bantamweight. I mean, he's taken on a tough guy in John Teixeira or John McCapa in that main event. I mean, how do you see the main event going?
Man, it's a step up for McKee, that's for sure, but he's been progressing nicely throughout the ranks. There's been a lot of knocks on Bellator for the way they pad records of their stars, but McKee's shown up in every single test, and this is going to be the biggest of them, make no mistake about it. But I think if he's able to deliver in this one, extend his winning streak, keep breaking Bellator records, and remain undefeated, he's legit.
I mean, people are kind of talking about the title situation at 145. There's a lot of people that want to put Pico ahead of McKee, but McKee's kind of that same type of prospect. And you want to talk padding records, I wouldn't necessarily say they've been padding it, right? Because, I mean, he took on Justin Lawrence in his last fight, which that's a tough fight for anybody. So he's 11-0.
Yeah.
Pico's 3-1, looking to go 4-1 at Bellator 206 next week. Another one of the fights that's on there, the co-main event, you've got Rafael Lovato Jr. taking on John Salter. Would you consider that as a middleweight, you know, number one contender type matchup?
I personally would, and I'm a BJJ nut myself. I love jiu-jitsu, so that's a dream matchup for me. If it's not a middleweight contender bout, it's going to determine who faces the winner of Carvalho versus Machida, which is going to be happening at Bellator Hawaii. Then that fight would be for who gets the shot at the title.
It's a tough one, especially where we have Rory McDonald, Gegard Mousasi next week. And it's so hard to tell if Rory wins. And I was on the media call-in yesterday. Rory kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, this weight cut, he hasn't had to worry about it too much. He's weighing in at roughly 190 pounds, only has to cut 5. He's eating carbs. He's enjoying himself. So it's almost like he might stick around at middleweight and say, you know, forget about the welterweight Grand Prix. And your alternate fight on there, it's pretty good anyway. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, especially with Lyoto Machida entering the fold. Take on Carvalho, who's one of the most under... I mean, all of the Bellator roster, I could come out and say, these guys are all underrated. But Carvalho is one of the most underrated guys in MMA, I believe, anyway.
Yeah, certainly.
Before we get going any further, I'd like to shout out my sponsors, First Row Collectibles. So head on over to the website, firstrow.ca. Use the promo code FNP for free shipping on your order. They're a collectibles company out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. And we actually had the owner, Curtis Housen, on, oh, geez, really early on in the podcast series. And he's a really big wrestling guy, brings in a lot of different wrestling events to the city of Winnipeg. But at the same time, he's a big MMA guy, and he actually got me in contact with one of his friends, Stefan Richard, who I also had on the podcast, who actually wrestled professionally over in Japan and around North America, and he got to know a lot of MMA guys as well. So two great guys. Make sure you follow the two on Twitter, at First Row on Twitter, or First Row Collectibles, and at Eversick Stefan. So if you head on over to First Row, There's baseball cards, hockey cards, I mean, wrestling memorabilia. The list goes on. Old episodes of Sports Illustrated from the 60s. Lots of neat stuff. So make sure you head on over there. Use the promo code FNP for free shipping. And to our listeners in the States, a reminder. All the prices are in Canadian dollars. So you're going to be saving roughly 24-25% when you make an order with First Row. The show is also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. And if you head on over to their website, sisuguard.com, use the promo code FNP10 for 10% off your order. If you're in MMA, if you play hockey, they're really, really thin. You can keep them in if you're doing an interview, if you're trying to have a drink of water, if you're trying to talk to your corner. I'm no joke. It's razor thin. Definitely one of the best mouthguards I've ever had. And they also include a $35,000 one-year full coverage dental warranty. So if you're wearing the mouthguard and you have any issues, you have that to fall back on. So head on over to the website, SISU Guard. If you buy a yellow mouthguard in the Aero or Junior styles, they're going to make a 10% donation to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a childhood cancer research foundation. So make sure you go to the website, SISU Guard, promo code FNP10, get a yellow mouthguard in the Junior or Aero styles, and you're going to be helping out childhood cancer research. Again, SISUGuard.com, promo code FNP10 at checkout.
I mean, if Roy McDonald wins the belt from Gegard Mousasi, which is a big if, and he decides to stay up there, which is another big if, that would reshape a lot with Bellator. I mean, there are a lot of intriguing options at 185, and of course, I'm stoked for the welterweight Grand Prix, so I'd hate to see the champion leave it. But at the same time, you couldn't fault Roy McDonald for having to avoid that weight cut and look at the bigger payday with Lyoto Machida.
100%. He talked also about, you know, all the wars he's been in, all the great fights that the fans have loved. But at the same time, you think of a Roy McDonald, Lyoto Machida fight at middleweight. I mean, that's one of those ones where, you know, looking at it this far ahead, maybe he wouldn't take so much damage.
I mean, if there's a fight out there at 85 where he wouldn't take as much damage, I would pinpoint Machida to be that fight. Machida's a counter striker. Obviously, he's getting up there in age. And with the exception of the Andrews fight, I believe he hasn't fought in several years prior with the USADA suspension. Not something he has to worry about in Bellator. But that might be a fight where Rory sees it as a safe fight. And I think that might be a bit of a trap because we know Machida's still a dangerous striker. But yeah, I think we can safely assume that wouldn't be a war.
So moving on with Bellator 205, you got Patricky taking on Roger Huerta. I mean, that's such a tough fight, you know, from the outside looking in. Huerta hasn't really been the same since he was with the UFC. He's kind of bounced around a little bit. Ended up coming in on short notice against Benson Henderson. Gets a contract out of it, almost similar to what Gerald Harris did. Short notice with Lovato Jr. Gets an extra four fights. And he's taking on Patricky Pitbull, who has been, I don't want to say hot and cold, but when he's faced really good opposition, it hasn't totally gone his way. He's searching for a Michael Chandler trilogy fight. He wants a premise fight with a win here. When we spoke earlier, I guess it was last week when I spoke to him, he said, I want to be able to get a win here against Huerta, end of the year fight premise for the belt, and then I want to fight Michael Chandler in 2019, and I don't want to just knock him out early. I want to beat him up over several rounds. Now, he's lost two fights to Michael Chandler, but I think against Huerta, I mean, he's got to be a lock to get the win.
Yeah, I would say so. If this was the Roger Huerta of old, it'd be a much more difficult decision, but it's 2018 and certain realities have come to pass. So if Patricky Pitbull is able to get past Roger Huerta, which for the sake of argument, let's say he is, that Michael Chandler bout is super intriguing. And I forget who reported it, so I apologize for not giving credit, but I've seen on Twitter a lot of guys are saying that the Primus Michael Chandler rematch is all said and done. It's just short of being finalized. So if that ends up happening, if Patricky wins, that makes perfect sense for the winner of that matchup.
100%. And another guy that I think could enter the picture, Eddie Alvarez. I mean, I don't really know what his contract situation is with the UFC. Dana White said, yeah, we'll have him back. But at the same time, you know, he's not going to get paid like a champion. They're not going to overpay for his talent. So I think if Eddie Alvarez enters the lightweight division in Bellator, I mean, that ignites so many different rivalries, so many different fights that could happen. A Chandler trilogy there as well. Last fight that's on this main card, or I guess the very first one really, would be Vitor Ortega and Denise Kiholtz. I mean, this is a really interesting matchup. If you haven't really followed Bellator and maybe women's MMA as it pertains to Bellator, this is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Kiholtz is undefeated in kickboxing, right? Or is she undefeated in MMA, but a legend in her own right in kickboxing?
Legend in kickboxing, bantamweight champion in Bellator kickboxing, 2-1 in MMA, according to Sherdog right now. But Vita Ortega got a win over Emily Ducote, former title challenger in Bellator against Lima Lay McFarland. She's fought her twice. She's lost twice, but she's also fought a lot of UFC talent Ducote had. So for Ortega and Keyholz, this is a pretty good fight, a pretty good one to start off that main card. And like I said, and you had said earlier, Boric and Jose Aldo Silva to end the prelims. So make sure you head on over to the Bellator app or Bellator website. You can catch those. So as far as Bellator 206 is concerned, what's one of the fights that really catches your eye?
Man, I hate to state the obvious, but it's got to be Gegard Mousasi and Rory MacDonald. I mean, these are two of the best martial artists in the world, regardless of weight class. Rory's moving up. They're both champions in their respective divisions. I don't know what else you can say. They're two unbelievable tacticians. It's going to be a great fight.
I mean, I've talked about this on a lot of different shows. I mean, you can catch some of my content on Dialogue, host a show with Ty O'Keefe. Now, he had the opportunity to ask a couple questions about Rory's camp. Like I said, weighing in roughly 190 right now, so he's not going to have to worry about the weight cut too much. Gegard Mousasi, you know, one of the constant professionals, one of the best guys in the game. It's not going to be an issue for him to make middleweight. I think as long as Rory MacDonald doesn't get caught by Gegard's games, I know Gegard's probably going to want to take the fight to the ground and just pin him there and keep him down. You don't want to see that like the Carvalho fight for MacDonald. So right now, out of the gates, we're about a week away from the fight, but I've got Rory so far.
I think I'm leaning Rory as well, and I think a lot of that might come from the turtleneck sweater and the American Psycho kind of Red King charisma.
Canadian Psycho.
Absolutely. I apologize. I was thinking more movie-oriented, but yes, absolutely. But, I mean, Gegard Mousasi has been one of the stealthiest, most under-the-radar, sneaky good fighters for virtually his entire career. So, I mean, as much as I want to count him out, I can't.
Now, I got to put this to rest a little bit because the headlines today coming out of the Bellator press conference and the media call-in yesterday, pretty much every outlet reported that Gegard thinks that the UFC is on the decline, that Bellator is above them. And I kind of want to clarify that a little bit. If you go back, you can actually listen to it. It's on YouTube, the full press conference. But he more or less said there's a lot of stars that have come over to Bellator. They found success. The promotion's been very good to them. The money's been good. And I think that's more of what he meant. He might have actually, like, direct quote said the UFC's on a bit of a decline, but you'd have to actually go and listen to the conversation. Now, two of the guys that got asked a lot of questions in that media presser, Rampage Jackson, Vanderlei Silva, the fourth matchup. Do you care about this fight?
I do, but it's for a selfish reason. I got into MMA late. I actually started fully being an MMA fan with UFC 194, so I'm a rookie. So for me to be able to live that, well, not trilogy, what's the term for four fights, but to see those that rivalry come to fruition live, that's going to be special for me personally. I definitely get, though, the past their prime references and other things. But for me, it's big because I get to see it live.
Who do you think's going to win that fight?
If I had to guess, I would say Rampage. He's been more active. He's been fighting up at heavyweight. So he's been putting in work, and he hasn't been worried about weight cuts. So I think Rampage takes it, but I'm just expecting a good fight.
I agree with you. I know a lot of people on Twitter were kind of going back and forth with me. They were comparing this to Tito Chuck. And then people were saying, well, Tito Chuck, that's going to be like Data 5000 and, you know, Kimbo Slicer. It's going to be like one of those poor fights. It's a bad matchup. But I think Tito Ortiz, Chuck, it's going to go a lot better than most people figure. I think it's going to be, you know, Tito wrestle heavy. He's going to get an early TKO win. It's not going to be a boring fight. And I think the same thing goes for this Rampage Vanderlei fight. I mean, both guys, their last losses have come to Chael Sonnen, surprisingly. And Vanderlei Silva hasn't fought since that NYC card. So I think I agree with you on that one. I think Rampage Jackson Vanderlei. Now, the fight that I'm most invested in, the one that I'm most excited for, has got to be another trilogy. But it's between Douglas Liam and Andrei Koroshkov. I mean, these two guys could slot into the top 10 of the UFC's welterweight division easily.
Easily. Both of these guys I would pick in several matchups with the UFC's top 15 at the welterweight division and even the top 10. But what makes that fight so intriguing to me is that they're so evenly matched. They're two guys at the top of their game, at the top of the division. They've taken the belt from one another, and it's such a great matchup, because just wherever the fight goes, it's going to be explosive, it's going to be dynamic, it's going to be exciting, and I don't even want to give a pick here, because I just want to see the fight.
Man, that's totally fair. I did a Bellator 205 preview, I believe it was last night, if it wasn't the night before, on Dialogue, and I said, listen, I still haven't made my mind up about this. I had a chance to talk to Andrei Koroshkov with his translator, Alexei. It was on Tuesday night, and I spoke to him about his game plan, and he said, you know, it hasn't strayed too much from the last two fights that I had. Of course, one was a win by decision. One he got, you know, it was a TKO loss. So it's tough. But Andrei Koroshkov has, man, just filthy speed. His combos are good. His spinning attacks are good. We saw it against Vaso Bakasevic back at Bellator 203. So that he was kind of a jobber that he faced there. But at the same time,
matchup was announced.
Exactly. But his skills are definitely top level. Lima's last fight against Rory McDonald, that was back in January. Didn't actually get a chance to watch that card because I was actually at UFC 220. So kind of missed that one. But it was a good fight upon further review. And it's a tough one to call. Now, the one before that, had a chance to talk to Leandro Higo, taking on Aaron Pico. That's a tough one. That's a tough one to pick.
Yeah. Just like I was saying with the McKee fight against Teixeira, Macapa, however you want to call him. I don't know what the formal way is, so I'm just going to use both. It is a major step up. Leandro Higo just fought for the title against Darren Caldwell. Like, that is about as big of a step up as you can get, save for a title shot. So if Aaron Pico delivers here, I, for one, am going to be thrilled. I mean, you can't script a better prospect status than for Aaron Pico. He was training jiu-jitsu at 10th Planet. That since has passed, but for the sake of this line of thinking, we're going to stick with it. He had his main camp with AKA, boxing with Freddie Roach, a U.S. Olympic wrestler. Like, he's as credentialed as they come, as big name as they come.
As well, training with all those guys at Team Body Shop. So a lot of great guys, similar weight classes. As far as Higo goes, yeah, I mean, he was RFA, LFA, kind of when they merged. He was the bantamweight champ there. Then he joins Bellator, loses to Eduardo Dantas. I mean, that's not a bad loss. You can take that one. Gets a win. And then he fights, yeah, like you said, Darren Caldwell, who's one of the best wrestlers in general in MMA, not just in the bantamweight or featherweight divisions. Now, it's tough because when I asked Higo, you know, what does a win over a super prospect like Aaron Pico do for you in the featherweight division? He said, well, I don't know. You know, I'm not aiming to fight for the title anytime soon because Patricio's the champ there. Right. And so they're both pit bulls. They both train together. So, you know, Patricio is almost more like a mentor. So for Higo, he kind of wants to flip-flop between bantamweight and featherweight, which is all right. And I think a win over Pico would kind of leave him in good standing in the bantamweight division, but I don't know what his title aspirations are.
At featherweight, with Patricio in charge, I don't think he can go for the title or want to in the first place. But if he goes back down to bantamweight, there's the rematch with Caldwell, which he's only going to get if he can rack up some impressive wins, which a win over Pico would be just that.
Yeah, like I think the next fight to make for Higo would almost be, you know, wait until Michael McDonald's healed, once his hands are healed or hand, and then have them fight it out. But that's all dependent on whether or not Darren Caldwell wants to stick around in the division or he actually makes, you know, a move up to featherweight, which he said, as far as legacy and fans are concerned, he has to make the move.
Yeah, he's got the win over Noad Lahat, and he looked really good in that win.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't stay up at 45 if not to defend the belt.
100%. And now the first fight that's on this main card, it doesn't make any sense to me because I think Arlene Blenko, Amber Liebrock would make a lot more sense to have. But they've got Carrie Ann Taylor Melendez taking on Dakota Zimmerman. If you go on SureDog, Zimmerman's record is one loss as an amateur after her pro debut, which is kind of sketchy. And then you've got Carrie Ann Taylor Melendez. Obviously, most people recognize the Melendez name, but at the same time, she's accomplished in her own right. So I think this is more a stepping stone for her to kind of get onto the main stage, gain some fans, and make a name for herself.
Yeah, definitely. I always hate when promotions rush potential stars or prospects in the name of a sink or swim. I like to see a natural progression, kind of like the UFC is doing with Dominic Reyes. So for Melendez, I just think it's a big deal for her to go out there, win tactically, win emphatically. And if she can do that, she's well on her way to becoming the next female star for Bellator.
So we kind of connected earlier on, I believe it was this week, and we were talking about contract issues between a former Bellator fighter and the ACB promotion. Now, I've been a big fan of ACB I probably watched my first event. It must have been ACB 86 or 87. And then I was all in, fully immersed. I mean, I watched 88. It was one of the best events I've ever seen. I mean, three title fights, excellent production values. Their thing is, you know, let's keep the ball rolling. One fight's done, another fight starts. They've got Frank Mir in the commentary booth. They've got top stars in their own right. Now, one of the stars that they acquired, kind of Bellator left a little bit of a sour taste in his mouth, was Fernando Gonzalez. And he signed a deal with ACB. It was a six-fight deal. Got his first fight against Peter Struis at ACB 87. Didn't go his way. And now he came on with me on the show last week, and he said, listen, ACB's giving me the opportunity to search for a fight. There's a chance that there's a fight. I believe it's in California, the Tito Chuck 3 card. He wants to fight on the undercard. And I didn't ask him, and I think I will, and this is all speculation, but I know Gleison Tebow is on the card, and I know Gleison Tebow has talked about moving up to welterweight, and he's on the undercard. Fernando Gonzalez has talked about welterweight as well and the possibility of going back down. So maybe that's a matchup that could happen. But as far as that, caught in the mix is Robert Whiteford. Man, what does he do?
Man, Robert Whiteford was signed to ACB. He's fought several times for them. Most recently, he was big on their card in Nottingham, which is his home country. So it was a big deal for Whiteford to be an ACB star. But as ACB suffered with cancellations of cards and rumors of financial mismanagement or a lack of funds coming into the promotion, Whiteford's kind of been hung out to dry. He's asked for his release. He's hired a lawyer. And so far, ACB has not honored the request for a release or spoken to the lawyer at all. And this is from his Twitter. I have no inside knowledge of the matter. I just want to make that clear. But it looks like it's a very difficult situation for Whiteford. He's being granted the opportunity, like Gonzalez is, to look for these one-off, one-promotion, one-show fights. But like he said on Twitter, it's difficult for him to gain traction with that. It's difficult for him to be, A, financially stable, be financially viable, and see to gain traction within a new promotion. If you get a shot with one fight, one show, and one promotion, it's very difficult to move your way up the rankings, earn a title shot, or have the promotion invest in you. So I don't know what he does from here. He's done everything by the book. He's brought in a consultant, a lawyer, and I think this is an opportunity for ACB to right a wrong and grant him the release from his contract.
I totally agree with you. I mean, as great as a promotion as it is, where they have had these mismanagement issues, there's guys that are kind of stuck in the middle and they want to get everybody some fights. Like Gonzalez had said, you know, they're giving me this opportunity. I'm going to take it and hopefully I can get a chance with Golden Boy MMA. And as far as Robert Whiteford's concerned, hopefully he's able to get a one-off, whether it's with Cage Warriors or Bama or maybe one of those promotions kind of closer to home. Even Brave. Brave would be a great example for him, or a great shot, but yeah, hopefully he can kind of figure out that contract issue. Hopefully they're willing to work with him. I know they have been with some guys. I think they put a lot of eggs in certain baskets. I know Herb Dean's one of the featured referees there. They make a big deal of him. He takes pictures with fans. He signs autographs. They brought in Jeff Houston from Bare Knuckle Boxing. He's been their new ring announcer. Pretty flashy guy with a lot of flair. He was on the podcast at one point. A lot of fun to have him on. And then they signed a lot of top talent. I mean, Reza Madadi was one of those guys. Brad Pickett that was supposed to be fighting at ECB 89. So there were a lot of there was a lot of money placed in a lot of different spots. Then they kind of got into a rough patch. They decided that they'd go with a pay-per-view model. Of course, the pay-per-view model didn't actually work out at ACB 89.
Right.
They ended up streaming the card for free on YouTube. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens with the promotion.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, because I know I kind of beat up on them in the previous frame, I love ACB. ACB,
100%.
Less show. It's fantastic. The show's fast-paced, explosive, dynamic. It's great to watch. They've got a slew of unbelievably talented fighters. And this is, again, another selfish thing, but ACB Jiu-Jitsu is a great promotion. They've brought in top talent. They had Buchecha. They had Herbert Santos. They had Gordon Ryan. But again, I believe with Gordon Ryan, there was another financial issue where he was either released or asked for a release from the promotion. So I hope they can just get everything together, because it'd be a real shame to lose out to ACB.
Yeah, I mean, one more thing before we move on a little bit. Like you said, ACBJJ had Josh Emmett on, who was almost barely even cleared by doctors to go over there and compete in that, because he wasn't cleared for full contact or anything to do with his head. So it was kind of tough for him, but he ended up taking on Tukugov, who we're going to see competing at UFC Moncton against the greatest of all time, Artem Lobov. So I'm really looking forward to that fight. But As far as Josh Emmett's concerned, it was neat to see him going over there. He really enjoyed the experience, loved going over to Russia, and they paid quite well. So hopefully we're able to see some more of those cards. Now, transitioning from that, and like I said, Josh Emmett, UFC, we've got UFC Sao Paulo this weekend, which right now, and people are going to be viewing this on Friday, but we have the UFC presser with Khabib and Conor. I'm not watching it right now. I'm sure you're going to tune in very soon. What do you expect with this?
With the press conference?
Yeah.
Well, I expect Conor McGregor to be Conor McGregor. I'm expecting him to show up late with a fur coat. He's going to say that the fur coat is made from bears, given Khabib's relationship with the animal. He's going to put his feet up on the desk, take Khabib's belt, and say to everyone, who the fuck is this guy?
100%. So that's today. On Saturday, we've got Sao Paulo, again, flying under the radar because there's been so much coverage on UFC 229. Even UFC 230, and that's another thing. Last night's big news was the fact that John Jones, retroactive 15-month suspension, eligible to come back October 28th. You've got that card coming up, 230, home state. Do you think he's going to be in the main event of that?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Dana White said no.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense because obviously in the MMA community, there's this joke of if Dana says no, it means yes. If Dana says it won't happen, it will. But it also makes sense from a promotional standpoint. I doubt Dana wants to give a scoop like John Jones returning for UFC 230 in his hometown or home state, I should say, up to as a report days before a major press conference. I think we might see that announcement today at the McGregor-Khabib press conference. But if we don't, I'm just anxious to see who the 230 main event would be.
Exactly. I think, personally, it's already a stacked card. You've got about half of the top 15 in the middleweight division competing. So, I mean, that alone should be able to sell a card, especially the fact that you've got Poirier Diaz. And I think, realistically, I think, now most people are going to disagree here, I think Tony Ferguson is the best lightweight in the world. I think Dustin Poirier deserves the title shot the most. So we'll see how this all plays out. But that's I guess, for another day. We've got Sao Paulo this weekend. I alluded to it already. You've got two middleweights moving up to light heavyweight, fighting in the main event. Who have you got, Thiago Santos or Eric Anders?
I've got Thiago Santos. I think he's a veteran. He's experienced enough to be able to deal with the unorthodox style and the kind of wrestling-based attack that Anders uses. And I hate to say it, but I think it might. You know what? Never mind. I'm glad to see that middleweights are moving up to light heavyweight. I'm a big proponent of ending weight cutting or ending it as extreme as it is now. Both of these guys are big, big men, and I think it's good that they're not going to be having to deplete themselves and drain themselves before a big event.
Eric Anders, I'm a little nervous for, just because in his fight with Tim Williams, which was, what, 3 weeks ago? It hasn't been very long.
Right.
He lost the first two rounds, and it came out, and he said, I believe it was on Ariel's ESPN show, give credit where credit's due.
Absolutely.
And Eric Anders said, you know, I asked the referees before the fight, to explain the downed opponent rule. I asked them many times, and he said he was almost looking for that soccer kick type finish on Tim Williams, which he waited long enough to do it. So he was able to get the win. Eric Anders, to me, he's kind of in an odd position. I know he's 11-1. That one loss, I had him winning. I had him beating Lyoto Machida, lost by split decision in Brazil. You know, take it as you will. But Thiago Santos, one of the most dangerous guys in the middleweight division, still ranked 12th. Love watching him fight. He was on that 4-fight win streak, all TKOs. I got to see one, poster behind me there, the Brown Lewis card. It was there. So really big Thiago Santos fan. Love watching him fight, and I think he's going to be able to get it done here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he's too explosive. He's too talented of a striker with too much power to have anything go any further than a decision, especially with it being a main event. 5 rounds? I doubt it.
Exactly. And I mean, it was a tough fight against Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland, a guy that came in with a lot of hype to the Contender Series, didn't perform, I don't think, to his fullest abilities, ended up going to a decision, surprised he got signed, honestly, but man, he took everything Santos had to give him and then some, and I couldn't believe it. But yeah, that's the main event. As far as this entire card's concerned, are there any other fights that you're really interested in, put a lot of stock in?
Well, yeah, actually there are. I actually put together a series that's going to be starting from this event on. It's called Bite Size Preview. So essentially the premise is we take all the fights from the card and break each one down in 75 words or less. So it's just something for you to check it out and see what's going on. If you're busy, you miss a flight, or you're not sure what's going on. So I've been doing that, and in the midst of it, I've been doing a lot of research for the card. And Chase Sherman's going to be coming back. He's going up against Augusto, and Augusto is a great fighter, Bellator veteran. I believe he's got 9 knockouts to his name. So it's 10 knockouts versus 9 knockouts. That's going to be a very fun fight. And I think that might be flying under the radar, especially because Chase Sherman's a big guy in terms of his Twitter presence.
Yeah, Chase Sherman, big guy in terms of his Twitter presence. I think that really kind of brought him into a mainstream type role. A lot of people recognize him, and then his fighting hasn't quite caught up to it. And I wonder if he's improved enough against Sakai, like you said, a guy who's got all those knockouts. I believe he's 10-1-1 right now, and he's actually the betting favorite now. If you go by different sites, he's a minus 250 to a minus 275. And personally, I mean, I don't put money on any of these fights, but I like to know, you know, what the rest of the crowd's kind of thinking going into these. So Sakai, a big favorite. For me, one of the fights that I'm really interested in, and I know it's a pretty easy one, but the co-main event between Peter Soli and Alex Oliveira. I mean, if you told me, you know, Alex Oliveira is going to be fighting tomorrow morning at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'd wait until 2 o'clock in the morning to watch him fight. He's one of those dynamic guys. Always brings it, potential fight of the night. And for Peter Soli, I've been paying attention to him since about the Venator days when he was competing in the Italian circuit. Then he took on Nicholas Dalby, who a lot of UFC fans are really familiar with. Brought him to the brink, ended up winning by split decision. Won by split decision in his UFC debut. But the one problem with Carlo Peter Soli, and he's still young, 11-1, he's 25 years old, is the fact that it's a three-strike combo, ends it with a head kick, and it's the same thing over and over and over again. And opponents have been able to figure out Holly Holm. She throws that kind of same combo, same thing every time. You can gauge it. You can figure it out. And I think Peter Soli is going to have to improve and be a little bit more dynamic to get the win over Oliveira.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. From a technical standpoint, the only thing I can say that would be slightly different is if he's able to draw the Brazilian cowboy into a brawl, he might be able to get away with something.
Yeah, and I mean, he definitely could win that way. I think so. I think Oliveira, you know, he has been finished in the past, so that's kind of one of those things going for Peter Soli. Another one of those fights that's on the main card that, honestly, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me. I know there was an article that came out yesterday. Is there a chance that Sam Alvey can vault himself way up the light heavyweight division? I don't think he's going to go that far. But taking on Little Nog, I mean, this has to be a retirement fight for Little Nog.
Yeah, I hope it is. We were talking earlier about Rampage and Vanderlei. People are saying that's a lot like Chuck Tito. I would hate for Little Nog to get to that stage in his career. I hope this is... I mean, he's going to if he retires, he's retiring in Brazil. You can't script a better storybook ending unless it's a win.
Exactly. And the only other fight that's on this card, I mean, there are some fights that there's speculation whether or not it's going to be a retirement fight. You've got Evan Dunham, who's kind of maybe mentioned it. Talos Ladies as well. Ben Saunders taking on Sergio Moraes. These guys are kind of up there in age. Saunders 35, Moraes 36. Ben Saunders said in his last fight against Jake Ellenberger, man, I'm going for the title. I'm going to do it. You know, he had a lot of success in Bellator, had an early fight in the UFC, and now he's just kind of continued in the UFC. I mean, it's a stacked welterweight division, but that's a tough one. I'm having a hard time trying to figure out how this one might go.
Man, I don't know who's going to take it. I just hope that it goes to the ground because Moraes is a legitimate Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu from Brazil, so you know it's legitimate. And Ben Saunders is a 10th Planet guy, so I hope it goes to the ground. Ben Saunders is the first man to secure an Umaplata finish in the UFC. So if we see these two guys go at it at the ground, I will be thrilled.
Yeah, and it's hard to try and predict. And the other thing that's going for Ben Saunders, I mean, he's got a huge height and reach advantage. He's got a 5-inch reach advantage and 2 inches of height, so it should be a great card. I mean, if you could rank this card, give it a letter grade, what would you give it?
Well, I have this argument with a few friends of mine all the time because they see each card and they rate it based on the name recognition, the star talent, and whether or not it's a good card of names. Meanwhile, I, on the other hand, I'm just here for the fight. So if I had to rate this card based on name value and name recognition, it would probably be a 5 or a 6 out of 10. Yep. But in terms of the value of the fights and what the fights could bring us in the way of entertainment value, probably a 7 or an 8. I think this card is going to be slept on for good reason, because I don't think there's anything to capture the eye of a casual fan, with the exception of maybe Eric Andrews' football background, which should be blowing up ESPN right about now. But I think this card's going to be sneaky good. Shades of UFC 221.
I think it's going to be another good one. I think the whole Eric Anders, Alabama thing, while it might not be as big of a deal up here in Canada, I know he's got that big pocket around the school, and those people are going to be, you know, captivated. They're going to be watching. It's on FS1, so you've got that as well. Right. And I think I agree with you. The number I had in my head, probably 7 or 8, maybe if I gave it a letter grade, like a B+, as far as, you know, value and the you know, entertaining aspect of the fights. Michael, it's been great. It's been great having you. As far as the fans, you know, where can they find you online and where can they find your work?
They can find my work over at MMA Today, or at MMA Sucka. I'm also on Twitter at Michael Fidel. And I just made the Instagram account at Michael Fidel MMA. So they can find me there. I love talking to you guys. So please let me know. And thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
Awesome, man. We'll have to do it again soon.
Absolutely.
Really glad to have had Michael on the show. And make sure you check out some of his work, MMA Today News, as well as MMA Suck. And I can't wait to have him back again. We covered a slew of MMA topics, and it was a lot of fun for sure. So that just about does it for this episode of Fight Night Picks. Make sure you head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the channel there. I'm running a giveaway right now. There's an Al Iaquinta card here right in front of me, signed 2015 Tops UFC High Impact Iaquinta signed card. And if you head on over to YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Fight Night Picks on YouTube, you'll be entered to win this card. And the draw ends next Friday, September 28th. I'm really looking forward to connecting with a lot of fans. If you've already subscribed on YouTube and you're a fan of the podcast and of the show on there, just reach out to me, send me a DM, let me know that you've done it so you can be entered in to win that. So glad I could have both guests, Volkan Ozdemir, Michael Fidel. It was a lot of fun, you know, making this episode and interviewing both guys. And I hope you really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to the next episode, Fight Night Picks episode number 41. So make sure you check out the content on Twitter at CraigAllenFNP, on Instagram, CraigAllenFNP as well. And I'm going to be hosting a few more dialogue shows this weekend with Ty O'Keefe and some other personalities. So I'm really looking forward to that. And we'll see you again next week.